Hello, everybody. My name is Laurent Saint-Martin, and I am a partner with PwC Strategien based in Paris. Thank you for joining our webcast today, and I'm delighted to welcome you all. And I must say that there are many participants all over the world in Europe, but also Africa and South America. Thank you for your attendance. We recently released a report laying the foundations of a low-carbon hydrogen market in Europe, where we looked at the building blocks of the nascent hydrogen economy from stimulating demand, the economics of supply, green versus blue hydrogen, to how to create an international trading market and the importance of regulatory intervention and country policies. So today we are going to share some of the findings from our report, as well as hear from leading experts in the field, and I will introduce them in a minute. In terms of running order, we have an hour for this webcast. We are going to do a little context setting with help from our colleague Adrien Del Maestro, who is a director with PwC Strategien UK. Then we will ask our guest speakers to share their perspective on the hydrogen market. Then we shall open up to questions and answers with our authors, asking the panel a few questions, as well as fielding questions from the audience. Concerning the audience, feel free to ask questions in the chat. Then I shall pass over to my colleague Dirk Niemeyer, who is a director with PwC Strategien Germany, to provide a brief summary of what we have discussed. And I shall then conclude the session. So with no further ado, let me introduce our three exceptional guest speakers before passing over to Adrien. Valérie, thank you for joining us today. You are Hydrogen Ecosystem Director at Michelin, President of Hydrogen Europe, Chair of the Governing Board of the Fuel Cell Hydrogen Joint Undertaking, and you have been appointed as Board Member and First Vice President of France Hydrogène. With more than 20 years of experience working at leading tier one manufacturers, you have built on a solid track record in the automotive industry, developing a strong expertise in marketing, clean technology innovation. You hold a master's degree in international management from the Cage Business School and an executive degree in international management from ESSEC Business School in Paris. Valérie, we are delighted to have you with us as part of our panel today. Thank you.
Thank
Graham.
You.
Graham, you joined ITM Power as CEO in 2009 and are still today at the helm of the company, which has been developing electrolyzer equipment for over 20 years. You started your career in the power generation sector in the UK, holding leading position as business development manager at National Power and at International Power, focusing on energy storage and new generation technologies. Prior to joining ITM Power, you were the CEO of SensorTech, the founding CEO of Metalysis and of Antenova. Graham, you hold a PhD in physics in addition to an MBA from the University of Bradford, and you sit on a number of industry's bodies. You are a fellow of the Institute of Metals, Minerals and Mining, and a member of the UK government's Hydrogen Advisory Council. Graham, it's our pleasure to have you with us today. Thank you. Armin, you are the acting Executive Vice President, New Energy Business at Siemens Energy, and a member of the Supervisory Board and the President of VDE. You are also an active member of IEEE and SIG. Since you earned your PhD in electrical engineering from the University of Technology of Dortmund, you have held numerous research and management positions in the power industry, focusing on high voltage products, new technology fields, and energy and electronics at ABB and Siemens. Armin, you are also assumed the role of director of the Institute of High Voltage Technology and full professorship at the RWTH Aachen University from 2001 to 2018. Armin, very glad to have you with us today.
It's my pleasure.
Adrian, over to you now for the hydrogen market presentation overview.
Thank you. Thank you, Laurent. Let me just say welcome to all our participants today. Thank you for making the time to listen to us. What we wanted to do briefly was just set a little bit of context setting in terms of highlighting some of the key themes and issues that we see in the hydrogen market. And hopefully that will feed into the Q&A, and I'm certain that it will stimulate the thoughts of our expert panel. So first thing to really address is why hydrogen now? Many of you will be aware that this is it's not a new technology. It's been around for many years. Think of the space program. And there have been false dawns for this technology in the past. But why do we think now it's different? And I think there's a number of factors that are converging that we've highlighted on the left-hand side of this slide. So if you think about public sentiment that shifted towards a sense of urgency around tackling climate change in the last few years. And as a result, you've seen many corporates, governments and cities announce net zero emissions, net zero ambitions. That certainly helped propel the momentum for hydrogen. And on the back of that, you're increasingly seeing countries coming out with national hydrogen strategies. Clearly, the pandemic has also been a catalyst as part of this momentum, this growing momentum. If you think about how many national governments are rolling out fiscal stimulus packages to stimulate an economic recovery, there's an increasing focus on a greener recovery, a build back better momentum. That's certainly helped hydrogen. And then I think if you look at it from the perspective of green hydrogen, for example, the falling cost of renewables is certainly a factor there. We've seen the cost of renewables come down year on year quite dramatically. And similarly, we've seen the scale up of the deployment of renewable energy, which has been a supportive factor there. And if you think about some of the challenges of renewable energy, particularly around the intermittency of supply, there's clearly a potential there for hydrogen to act as some kind of energy storage that's large scale and long duration. And possibly from an economics point of view, we are still in a period of low interest rates and strong market liquidity. So clearly there is capital to be deployed for this sector. And if you think about what those demand sectors might be, we've highlighted a few here. So we definitely think heavy industry is going to be an immediate beneficiary of hydrogen. And when we say heavy industry, think of cement producers, steel producers, refiners, for example. And typically a lot of those heavy industry players will be located in industrial clusters. Again, those will be areas that you think would benefit from hydrogen applications. And certainly in terms of heavy transport, think of trains, heavy goods vehicles, heavy trucks. Those are likely to be beneficiaries of hydrogen given the challenges of electrification haven't quite exceeded in those areas. There's a lot of talk about heating networks. If you think of the need to decarbonize heating networks, there is a lot of interest in blending hydrogen with natural gas, maybe up to 20%, and potentially replacing it by 100%. But I think that those kind of applications are probably a little bit further off. If we turn to the next slide, in terms of just getting a sense of scale of where we are now, global demand for hydrogen now is roughly around about 70 million tons a year. This is the IEA scenario, sustainable development scenario. Quite a conservative scenario. You'll see other ones in the market that are more bullish. But you can see even in the conservative scenario context, by 2030, demand could go well, could reach 300 million tons a year, so going up by a factor of four, and potentially by 2070, a long time away, but still going up well over 500 million tons a year. So about 4% year-on-year growth. And as indicated there, and we've alluded to this already, there are some sectors that we think are going to be driving that growth, certainly the refining, steel, power generation, cement, and heavy mobility, as we've just alluded to. If we turn to the next slide, I guess the other side of the equation is the supply side. And I know that our panel will have very strong views about this. So I'm going to stay light on this slide, but all this slide really shows The production economics for hydrogen by the different shades, the many colors of hydrogen, split by 2018, 2030, and 2050. And these are all in US dollars per kilogram. I guess the thing that leaps out for me now is you've got blue hydrogen that's probably the most competitive now, and that's hydrogen produced using carbon, hydrogen from natural gas using carbon capture technology. Green hydrogen, so use of electrolysis from renewable sources, that becomes more competitive, much more competitive by 2030. So there may be an argument that you might want to promote blue hydrogen now simply to start getting scale in the industry. And as green becomes more and more competitive, that will supplant blue. And the price of green could come down sooner and faster. So maybe well before 2030. But again, I'm sure our panel will have some views on this. If we flick over to the next slide, I think one of the interesting things about the energy transition from a macro level is if you think about how the proliferation of partnerships we're seeing between corporates to accelerate their capabilities in the energy transition. So you see corporates forming partnerships to build capability and also to syndicate technical risk and financial risk. And we're seeing the same thing in the hydrogen sector. So we've listed here on the left-hand side a few examples of partnerships that have been announced. And these are promoting the development of large-scale green hydrogen projects or mobility projects. But these are very different types of players. If you look at the bottom there, you've got automotive OEMs. The one above with Nel and Wood, for example, Nel's an electrolyzer producer with Wood, an oil services company. So expect to see more of these different partnerships between corporates. And that sense of collaboration translates also at the national level. So you're beginning to see countries that are positioning themselves to become major importers of hydrogen. So think of some of these European countries that are listed here in Southeast Asia. And similarly, there will be countries position themselves as major exporters, and you'll begin to see the growth of these trading corridors between these different regions, quite similar to what happened with LNG over the last 30 years. If we just turn to the next slide, I think one of the, and we talk a lot about this in our report, one of the key catalysts for success will be regulatory intervention. This is a nascent market. There are still some challenges around the production economics. And therefore, you really do need government support to catalyze the growth of this sector. And this slide just shows an example of national hydrogen strategies that have been announced across the world. The darker red and the lighter burgundy color gives you an idea of those that have been announced or being drafted. But this is already out of date. But just to note, for example, China, which clearly will be a big player, they've announced that in their next five-year plan, there will be a hydrogen element to that plan. And in the UK, for example, we're looking to release our national hydrogen strategy later this year. And if we turn to the next slide, and this is the final slide, there clearly are in the market some commentators, some investors that are skeptical about the impact of hydrogen. And not to be too blunt, they think there's a little bit of hype surrounding hydrogen. And if you're of that persuasion, you might look at share price performance to support that thesis as just one lens. And all we've done on this is looked at a number of players that you can see in the legend underneath the graph and just plotted their share price. And you can see that throughout 2020, the share price rose, peaked, a lot of these peaked around about 2021 and then have come back down. And again, I know our panel will have very robust views about the reliability of this as a lens. But I think if you look at some of the facts that we've already alluded to, you're seeing a proliferation of these partnerships in industry. We're seeing well over 200 global hydrogen projects underway. You're seeing money flow into this sector. So something of the order of $300 billion coming in between now and 2030 into these projects. And just to put a bit of context to show you the potential there, $300 billion sounds a lot, but remember, this is a nascent sector. If you look at a mature sector like the upstream oil and gas sector. In its heyday, we're somewhat past that heyday, but in its heyday, they were spending something like $600 billion a year in investment in upstream capex. So, you know, I think there's a lot of potential there for this nascent hydrogen market to grow. Hopefully that's giving you a flavor for some of the themes and the trends and gives a springboard for our panelists to comment on. But Laurent, I'm going to pass over back to you.
Thank you, Adrien, for setting the scene. Now, I'd like to give the chance to our panelists to share their thoughts on the hydrogen market. So it would be great if each of you, Valérie, Graham, and Armin, could spend 4 minutes sharing your thoughts about the opportunities and the challenge facing hydrogen. And if we could begin with you, Valérie, then Graham, and then Armin. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Laurent. And good morning, good evening to everyone. And thank you for the few slides that were shared there. They were very much into the topic that we will address tonight. As you saw in the slide, hydrogen has seen an unprecedented development in the year 2020 that was really unexpected to be that high. And hydrogen became from an innovative niche technology, became and is fast becoming a systemic element in the European Union efforts to transition to a climate neutral society by 2050. And hydrogen will become a crucial energy vector and the other leg of the energy transition alongside renewable electricity, and it will replace coal, oil, gas across different segments of the economy. So the rapid development of hydrogen is not only important for meeting the European Union's climate objective, but it is also crucial to preserve and to enhance the European Union industrial and economic competitiveness. That is key. So if we look back a little bit, 2020 has indeed been a very crucial year to make hydrogen a long-lasting solution. The European Hydrogen Strategy was only released a year ago, and it has set ambitious targets with a view to developing a hydrogen economy. Many member states in Europe, not only France or Germany or UK, but many member states did the same and supported their respective hydrogen strategy with substantial stimulus programs. So we can state now that hydrogen has become a cornerstone of the European Green Deal, and clean hydrogen can become a new commodity. Some even call hydrogen the new oil. I think it's a little bit more than that. Of course, we're not yet there. There are still many challenges ahead of us along the value chain in terms of production, storage, distribution, usages. But the most crucial challenge, in my opinion, will be our capacity to scale up and to scale up fast. We're not the only one. Europe is well placed, but others are on the running, are waiting to be first as well. The real test will be the implementation of concrete projects. And in Europe, in Hydrogen Europe, in France Hydrogen as well, we are extremely confident that the two action streams that have been initiated by the Commission at the European level will help to kickstart the hydrogen economy. And I will name the European Clean Hydrogen Alliance on one hand and the IPCEI process on the other hand. The implementation will, of course, happen in the member states, but they will need to implement a smart financial engineering of a funding scheme together with private initiative that we see in Europe, but also as stated in your slide, all over the globe. And it's very promising to see the level of investment activities which will have considerable leverage effects. At the same time, we need to consider new ways of using state aid to allow a faster approach to decarbonization. What I mean is that we need to consider, at least in the first phases, not only CapEx as a category, but more and more OPEX if we want hydrogen products to be realized and to be sustainable. The European strategy represents the first step towards success. Now the European Union needs to act to turn ambition into reality. If you look at the current hydrogen policy and regulatory elements of hydrogen, they're all distributed over gas, electricity, fuels, emission, and industrial frameworks with very limited overarching coordination. And hydrogen does merit a dedicated framework. That's why Hydrogen Europe proposed recently an Hydrogen Act. It is not at all a single piece of legislation. It is intended to be a vision for an umbrella framework aiming at harmonizing and integrating all separate hydrogen-related actions and legislation. This Hydrogen Act will describe different methods to incentivize market functioning on the production and on the demand side, including quotas targeted at the promotion or sectors such as clean steel and ammonia, to name a few. We are truly convinced that considering the challenges the hydrogen sector is confronted with in the context of the European Green Deal, the European economy recovery post-COVID, and the hydrogen strategy, dedicated guidelines on state aid for hydrogen technology should be promoted. We need clean hydrogen massively, and we need it to be affordable. We are really at a crossroad right now, and the next 3 to 5 years will be the most decisive period for hydrogen ever. So I would like to conclude by saying, time to act is not 2050, not even 2030. Time to act is now. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Valérie, for your speech, and we will be able to share other thoughts later on during the question and answer. Please, Graham, can you also give your thoughts on the hydrogen economy?
Sure. So, hi, I'm the CEO of ITM Power. So ITM Power is an electrolyzer manufacturer in Sheffield. We were the first hydrogen-related company on the London stock market, and an important year for us this year. We moved into the world's largest electrolyzer factory with a capacity of 1 gigawatt per annum, or 1,000 megawatts per annum. We make PEM electrolyzers, and actually we've been developing PEM electrolysis for 20 years. The PEM electrolyzer device is a device that you can plug directly into renewable power. You can turn it on and off very, very rapidly, and you make green hydrogen. So what's the significance of green hydrogen? Actually, green hydrogen is the only net zero energy gas. It's the only fuel with no carbon in its entire supply chain if you make it using renewable power by splitting water. And it's an incredibly important element of the energy transition, as Valérie has just pointed out. So I would agree as well with what Valérie said. The whole industry, the energy industry, has been taken by surprise about the adoption of hydrogen over the last year or two. It's been incredibly rapid. Let me give you some numbers. So the IEA report that was referred to in the introduction is saying that if we want to get to net zero by 2050, we need over 3,500 gigawatts of electrolysis. 2050 is 29 years away. I did a PhD in the materials that go into electrolyzers and fuel cells, and I'm embarrassed to say that was 36 years ago. We've got 29 years to scale up and manufacture 3,500 gigawatts of electrolysis. It's 100 gigawatts a year. Our factory is the world's largest, 1 gigawatt per annum manufacturing capacity. Okay, the US government, 2 days ago, the DOE announced their first moonshot. What they're saying is they're going to achieve net zero. To do that, they need 5 moonshots. What was the first one they announced? Green hydrogen. Okay, that shows you the significance. And Valérie is absolutely right. A key tenant of the European Green Deal, and that's 1 trillion euros, 15% of that, 150 billion of that is dedicated to green hydrogen. 100 billion over the next 10 years for contracts for difference auctions. to bridge the gap between green hydrogen, grey hydrogen in industry. So I've got one more point, if I may. Today, the world uses 70 million tonnes of grey hydrogen for industry. We are not waiting for the general public to buy cars that use hydrogen or buses. These are great high-value applications. What we are looking at as the entry market is decarbonizing industry by replacing green hydrogen, replacing grey hydrogen with green hydrogen. And that industry already exists today, and the demand exists today. It's refineries, ammonia, and methanol. And just one final point, all refineries in Europe are included in the Renewable Energy Directive, and they have an obligation to make 14% of their product renewably in the next decade. That means a massive market for large-scale industrial electrolyzers. And ITM is already working with Shell, with Linde, with Total, and with Phillips 66 to meet some of these targets.
Graham, thank you very much, Graham, for this introduction. And yes, we will talk again, but industry is number one priority to be changed before any others. We'll come back to this later. Thank you again. Armin, okay. Up to you now. Thank you very much for your points, and up to you for your introduction.
Yeah, Laurent, thank you very much. I mean, it's a pleasure you being on stage here, at least virtually. I mean, talking about the hydrogen economy, and everything has been said more or less, but nevertheless, hydrogen today or the hydrogen technology is a hype, right? This is important to notice. But nevertheless, we as Siemens Energy, we believe in the hydrogen economy. And why? Because it is the only way to make the second stage of the energy transition happen. I mean, we know about the energy transition when we are talking about renewable electricity mainly. This is about 20-25% of the final energy consumption, which is electrification, which is electrified. I mean, with electric mobility, with the electric heating and many further applications, we can increase this share up to maybe 40, 45, maybe even 50% of the final energy consumption, which can be electrified. So this is an important topic. But nevertheless, this means for the so-called sector coupling, we have more than 50% of the final energy consumption, which cannot or cannot easily be electrified and therefore not easily be decarbonized. And that's why we strongly believe in the hydrogen economy. And when talking about hydrogen economy, and this is the same what Valerie and Graham were talking about before already, is not only the hydrogen, it is even its derivatives like ammonia, like methanol and synthetic fuels. So this is important. What do we need to do in order to make it happen? And Valerie mentioned we need to act now, so we need to significantly accelerate to make the hydrogen economy happen. And this starts with the off-taker business. Production will follow. I mean, similar to ITM, we can easily cover the world's demand, which is there today, by our factory. We can double this by just adding a second or third shift, which is relatively easy, but there needs to be a market, and then production will follow. By saying that, we need to have the right regulatory framework in place. I mean, we need to have obligations like the Renewable Energy Directive 2, which its quota and say and its implementation in the different say countries and region. We will have something similar in Asia Pacific, in the Middle East, and in the Americas. And what's going on in the United States is quite promising. And then, I mean, we start from discussion of an hype situation towards a real market. And then we need to secure the technology, we need to secure the supply chain, we need to start immediately with large-scale pilot applications. And this is what we are really looking for. So we have shown the feasibility electrolyzer. So we are also in the PEM, the proton exchange membrane, a business similar to Graham. So we believe in the green hydrogen. Nevertheless, we need to really make it happen. We need an industrial scaling. And when talking about industrial scaling, we are talking about hundreds of megawatts, large scale applications. And this is a completely different topic and a completely different business compared to this nitty gritty, I mean, small scale kilowatts or hundreds of kilowatts businesses and applications we have today. So what we are saying is we believe in the hydrogen economy. We need the right regulatory framework in place to create the off-taker market. Then we will secure, and this we already do, the technology and the supply chain and the production capacity, but we need to start now.
All right, thanks a lot, Armin. I think we lost Laurent for a second, so I'm taking on in this minute and starting with the first round of questions after these introductions that you gave to us, and thanks a lot for that. And Armin, I would like to address the first question directly to you and also taking up what you talked about already, which is the industrialization. You talked about, you said, we need the large-scale products in order to be able to supply large volumes to the market. That is for sure true. We see the numbers that are going up, as Adrian showed that. But the question still is there, and I would like to hear your view as a producer on that. What is your view on how to realize the required industrialization of the production of electrolyzers? That is, at the moment, to my understanding, still like a small workshop or semi-large workshop. How do you plan to realize the necessary scale effects and the necessary production volumes?
Yeah, Dirk, you are absolutely right. I mean, when you're talking about the production facilities we have on the global scale right now, I mean, maybe beside ITM, beside Siemens Energy and very few others, we are talking about small size units or, I mean, medium-sized enterprises mainly. So what we did right from the beginning, we have been focusing on large scale electrolyzer power ratings. So we started with the, say, 100 kilowatt ranges already 10 years ago to implement into the market. 6 years ago, already the megawatt class. Now we are in the double digit and we are in the project development of the 100 megawatt plus class. This is important. And this is done by modularization and standardization in order to allow us in the production process, in the manufacturing center, for a higher degree of automation, right? So you increase the output capacity and at the same time, you keep or even improve the quality of the products. Mm-hmm. Yeah, both is important. And on top, and this is important as well, you need to work on the supply chain. When talking about leading technology, then you need to involve your partners in the, say, in the downstream area, I mean, suppliers of yours, which is important as well. So when talking about it's the size, it's automation and production, say, even having the right people in place and involving the partners.
Thank you very much, Armin and Dirk. Adrian, anything on your side?
Yeah, just a short question for Graham. You gave a really powerful perspective there on the need for green hydrogen. When I look at Europe, most of Europe is going green. UK seems to be hedging its bets, for want of a better expression. There's blue and green being promoted. What's your perspective on that dichotomy in the UK?
Yeah, I mean, from my point of view, obviously I'm a supporter of green hydrogen because it's net zero. Blue hydrogen isn't net zero. You don't get complete capture. You also continue to use a methane infrastructure. So when you do blue hydrogen, you use the existing methane infrastructure. You need a new CO2 infrastructure and an additional hydrogen infrastructure. Whereas when you do green hydrogen, you just need the hydrogen infrastructure. So not only are the infrastructural costs higher, but also you continue to use a methane infrastructure which leaks. And the carbon footprint of and the emissions footprint of methane, but far worse than CO2. And blue hydrogen is oil and gas business as usual. Green hydrogen is genuinely disruptive. It gives you energy storage for renewables, and it decarbonizes all uses of fossil fuels. So that's my view. The last point is that if you sequester CO2, somebody will have to underwrite those stores. So somebody's going to have to pay the bill for insurance. The oil and gas industry love it, of course, because it means the UK will import more natural gas than it did before. And the UK taxpayer will end up taking the liability for the CO2 stores. My view is you shouldn't make the CO2 in the first place. You should grow the green hydrogen industry alongside the renewables industry, providing it with energy storage. And I think that's why there is that view across the whole of Europe.
Thanks,
Graham and Adrian. Thank you very much for this. Perhaps Valérie, you should perhaps answer this question first, and then Graham and Armin could jump in. We see that hydrogen is gaining more and more traction. And this has been reflected in the share price of companies in the hydrogen value chain. In your opinion, what needs to be done to prevent the hydrogen bubble from bursting?
That's a very good and tricky question, especially when you have quoted companies around the table. So, gentlemen, I will start first. You cannot avoid the bubble. I think in a way, having a bubble is a good thing, and it does recognize the true value of hydrogen. And that's one of the reason why we need to create the market. We need to make the market a reality as fast as possible. And for that, as Armin stated, we need the appropriate and the adequate regulatory framework, for once. And then we need to accelerate on the market opportunities. Because when the companies will be on solid ground, then, I mean, you can still have bubbles, but it's based on reality. It's based on solid data. And it's really important to accelerate on the market output and create these market opportunities. And like Graham stated, I mean, it's good that we have companies who are now at the scale of 1 gigawatt electrolyzers, because that means that you can create value on new energy such as green hydrogen.
Thank you.
Can I just add to what? Yeah, thank you. Thanks, Valérie. There isn't a bubble. We're just going through an energy transition. We've all signed up to getting to net zero. We've got to do it in 29 years. We have to make thousands of gigawatts of electrolysis. That isn't a bubble. Anyone who thinks it's a bubble is saying that because they're either a journalist or because they're an investor who didn't spot it coming.
Thank you.
So maybe to add from your side, from my side, I mean, you cannot avoid a bubble. Never, ever. It was a nice try, I mean, to get something out of us, of course. But as Valérie said, I mean, create a market and everything will follow.
Okay. Thank you. Perhaps another question to you, Armin. How do you see the competition with the Chinese manufacturers? And how do you rate the risk that the business over time moves to China, as it happened for the PV panel some years ago?
I mean, this is not a special topic for electrolyzer or for any. I mean, this is valid for any business. I mean, China. I mean, why not talking about the United States or any other region, right? So the Chinese, of course, if you have a look on the 14th 5 years plan of the Chinese government, and this you will see a fantastic and really precise strategy with a strong focus on hydrogen and hydrogen economy, both on the application side, mainly in mobility, but also on the production side, securing technology, making some kind of a technology more mature, and with a clear target to have both the technology but also hydrogen as a product, as a commodity. Because if it is a commodity, then you have a big market. So this is a clear strategy. How do we act or react or go ahead? we are looking for cost and technology leadership. I mean, as a company, but as Europe, I mean, this should be, of course, our intention. And this is how we do it, and others as well. I mean, focusing on standardization, on modularization, R&D. So we are heavily investing in next generation technologies. I mean, reduce precious metals and all of that, increasing reliability, availability, and offering systems and solutions based on standardized products. So this is how we act on that. And this second topic and the last one here, with my respect, we should not bet on a market which is not a market, but which is strongly dependent on subsidies, right? This was the problem with the PV industry, especially in Europe and in Germany. So if we are really from the beginning focus on markets and on competition and cost and technology leadership, I'm pretty sure that we will have a big chance.
Mm-hmm. If I may compliment, I mean, and Armin, you're very right in both your points. I mean, we should not only rely on subsidies, but subsidies are key in order to mitigate the risk in the ramp-up phase. That's very important, and that's what Europe has truly understand. And that's one of the reasons on the European side you have what we call the Hydrogen Alliance, which is very similar to the Battery Alliance, which is what we call an IPCE, Important Project of Common European Interest, whose purpose is to strengthen and support an industrial value chain in order to make European champions able to compete in the world. And that's very important. So for that, at the beginning, you need subsidies, but you need to reach the level of competitiveness, level of technology maturity as soon as possible, because other countries are also participating to this race.
Yeah, thank you, Valerie. I mean, we need to get rid of the first of its kind risk. This is absolutely true. Fully support from us.
Graham, you want to answer, perhaps to elaborate a little bit on also on the electrolyzer technology that could will supersede the others in the coming decade. We've talked about potentially alkaline, PEM, but other technology coming in. So innovation, and perhaps you can elaborate on this.
No, actually, I was going to talk about China and your question about China. And then the reason I'd like to talk about that is because every single call that I go on for the last 3 months has been, what about China and what happened with solar? The whole world's paranoid about China. I'm trying to analyze why. It's a kind of a consultant and city cultural determinism going on. I mean, and always with the same lazy example of solar. So you don't have to be that lazy. The Japanese and the Koreans took control of electronics, didn't they? And maybe the US in pharmaceuticals. So you're using one example, and I don't think it's particularly relevant, actually. The cost structure of green hydrogen is related to the performance of the electrolyzer as well as its cost. You can't bung cheap technology at it. You need experience, you need to have done the development work, and you need partnerships. You also need the balance of plant, and you need deployment as well. So you need gas industry expertise. Okay, and I think if the whole of the Western world fears China, then it ought to pack up doing any manufacturing at all.
Okay, thank you. Perhaps a question relative to import and export and the trading market of hydrogen. On the audience today, there is people from Brazil, from Chile, from Morocco, and they are asking questions about the future of the import-export market and the development of this market. Perhaps, Valérie, you could start with this, and Armin and Graham could elaborate on this also.
This perspective has been already integrated in the European strategy, because when we're mentioning the fundamentals, we're talking about 2 to 40 gigawatt capacity production of green hydrogen. One of the 40 gigawatt is to be produced in Europe. The other 40 gigawatt are to be produced outside of Europe, especially in North Africa. So there are already agreements in with Morocco, for example, but you have a lot of cooperation which are being built up with Chile, with Australia, with all these countries which have an excess or which can produce massively renewable energy. So they can transform it into hydrogen and they can easily transport it in different forms. And that's very important. You have some countries such as Germany, for example, who launched a month ago in May what they call the H2 Global. So the H2 Global in Germany is their strategy to import green hydrogen, not only because they do not want to produce it in Germany, but they need it so much that the current level of production in Germany will not be sufficient enough. And that specificity, you find it everywhere. If we want to go fast, you don't switch from gray hydrogen to green hydrogen just like that. And that's, there's no magic behind it. So you need to build a production capacity that takes time, that takes money. And so that's why everyone is shooting for big capacity production. In the meantime, and if more and more industry and mobility and sectors are switching to using hydrogen, then at the end you will have a global market.
Thank you, Valérie. Graham or Armin?
Yeah, shall I proceed? I mean, this
yes,
is
please.
I mean, talking about, cost of green hydrogen, I mean, then we all know that it strongly depends on the levelized cost of electricity. So cheap electricity is important. About the loading factor, so the number of hours a year cheap electricity is available. And thirdly, infrastructure, which is electrolyzer and all of that. So it's quite natural that you firstly move into these areas where you have LCOE minimized and high loading factors, which is, for instance, in Australia, in the Middle East, Chile, say Patagonia, where we, for instance, with our partners Arma and Porsche are entered, and some others are entered in power to fuels projects, right? I mean, you have fantastic wind conditions there, which is allowing us to bring down the cost for green hydrogen. Of course, then you have the transportation challenge. So we are going the next stage towards methanol or synthetic fuels in order to overcome the challenge in the transportation. And the same applies for the UAE, where we work with our partners, Mazda, for instance, Lufthansa, Etihad, on the power to e-kerosene. So this is important. And H2 Global has been mentioned by Valérie. And this is something, I mean, in Germany, in this example, of course, we know that we cannot rely on local production only. I mean, this is, I mean, fantasy, if you would think that. Thanks.
Graham?
Yeah, so the way I come at this really is being able to generate a global market for renewable energy. So, renewable energy, if you make it using wind or wave, or hydro, geothermal, is localized. And actually, if it's the electron, you need energy storage. The point about green hydrogen is that when you make it using renewable power, you can store it and make it transportable. Because what you're doing is you're turning electrons into molecules, and you can move those around. And that makes for a commodity which is transportable and tradable. You can't do that with electrons unless you build cables. You can't build a cable all the way from Australia to Japan. What you can do is make green hydrogen, turn the target molecule into renewable methanol or renewable ammonia, put it on a ship, and then ship it to Japan. Now what you've got is an internationally tradable commodity, which is transportable, and will replace LNG. So you've got hydrogen in the form of liquefied hydrogen or compressed hydrogen or ammonia or methanol. And ammonia and methanol made with green hydrogen, an aviation fuel, and a marine fuel, which are two of the hardest fuel sectors to decarbonize. So that, as far as I'm concerned, it's all about making a tradable commodity and internationalizing the trade for renewable net zero energy.
Thank you very much all for the comments. I think many great questions right now and perspective share. We are reaching to an end to our webcast, and I would like to ask Dirk to summarize the discussion as we move forward. To you, Dirk. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Laurent. I'm happy to do that. Yeah, fantastic discussion with fantastic guest speakers. Thanks a lot to all three of you. And from my point of view, we have gained good insight, great insights into the development of the market. And this is around five major next steps that need to be done and are already underway. That is the stimulation of demand through technical innovation and through projects. And we heard that Amit said, if there is demand, there will be supply. We will manage to supply this. On the other hand, Graham's statement saying we need to have 3,500 gigawatts of electrolyzers capacity installed by 2050, that means 100 gigawatts per year, shows that the demand really is crucial to be stimulated, but also there is a large task to supply that at the end. Second point about bridging the cost gap between gray and green hydrogen to make it really cost effective. And we heard statements around we need support in the initial phase, we need some subsidies, but we need to go to a market. And that is to be realized by bridging this cost gap, by aligning economical and environmental goals and making green hydrogen more cost effective than gray and other energy alternatives. And examples to this on the production side have been mentioned, where Armin mentioned Chile and UAE, where they will set up large scale productions. The gigawatt factory of ITM was mentioned that can supply and can build up these scale effects to bring down the cost of green hydrogen. And therefore, the clear statement was there is no bubble, but we will bring down the cost and we will have a market on that. Also, the competition with the Chinese players is not seen as really a danger. That's what I took off the discussion, but the European suppliers are quite confident to be cost leaders based on the scale effects that they can produce based on the capacity that they have already now and the performance of the electrolyzers that really will safeguard them the market that they can supply them. But if we have the supply and the demand, we need to connect supply and demand, because we learned and we heard that there is supply to be happening outside of Europe, which is part of the European strategy and also the national strategy. So transport and storage need to be built up, and that might be ship transport via ammonia, via liquefied hydrogen or LOHC, that might be pipeline transport and probably also other means. But nevertheless, this is probably one of the next challenges to really set up the transportation infrastructure to really supply hydrogen in large amounts to the points of destination where it's needed. The trading market also was mentioned, and Valerie started that off with the naming hydrogen as the new oil. So saying this is the new major energy commodity that we will have in the world, and then therefore, of course, we need a global hydrogen trading market. And also then, I mean, Graham commented on that, saying, of course, hydrogen will become a commodity like that. It'll be as well ammonia and methanol, and all those will become tradable commodities, and this will also promote the market and help to supply hydrogen and to produce hydrogen where it's best and to supply it where the price is the highest. And that then drives also the way to the market using regulation and public incentives in the beginning. And that was also said, there are these IPCEI projects mentioned within the European Union, the RED II, the US hydrogen shot. So there are several incentive schemes that are established and probably more to come to improve technology readiness, provide investment security, also the OPEX support was mentioned, like contracts for difference, for example, to compensate initially higher hydrogen prices, green hydrogen prices. But the clear statement was the main goal must be to come to a market as soon as possible and really operate in a market that is economically viable. And therefore, for me, after this great discussion, there's nothing to add to Valerie's initial comment. I think the time to act is now, and over, with that, over to Laurent again. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Dirk, for your summary. And thank you to our panelists. That was great to hear from you three on the industry and the challenge facing hydrogen in the future. I would like also to thank the authors, Dirk and Adrian, who participate to this webcast. The audience was also very keen and very wonderful. We tried to ask a lot of questions. We will try to answer the different questions that were asked and not able to answer this time. You will find also the presentation. We will send the presentation to all the participants in order to for you to revisit our thoughts, our research, and the links to the hydrogen website of PwC will also be in this presentation. Thank you again for all of you, and stay safe for the future. Thank you very much. Bye-bye.